As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
On the airways every Tuesday just after 4:05, we head down to City Hall and check in with the mayor's office. And the mayor of the city of Bloomington is our great friend, John Hamilton. Mayor Hamilton, good afternoon. How are you?
Good to be with you, Mike. So I'm doing just fine. Thank you. It is a little steamy warm, but
that's a lot, all good. A lot steamy warm. So get down to the splash pad at Switchyard Park, jump around, cool yourself off here on an afternoon. Obviously, we didn't get caught up with you last week, but we have so much stuff to do, and there's plenty of things going on, and the list we had before we got on the airwaves is plenty to tackle. So let me start with construction, because I'm looking right out my window, and away the Seven Line Trail goes. Well, it was there's the island over on 7th Street east of Walnut. Now it is moving. Construction is west of Walnut, so that's just one way west to east on 7th Street. But after we get through College and Walnut, there's only one more piece of the puzzle to go, which will take us west from College down to the Beeline Trail. That's been coming along quite nicely.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching out my window to see when they get there, because I can see them from my window when they get close to the Beeline. But
well, let's hope they don't melt. My goodness.
Well, I think they're a little ahead of schedule, which is good. The weather's been helpful with that, and again, that'll be a really nice connector. I understand we've had some issues with people deciding they wanted to decorate their rooms with some of the traffic signs and indicators, so we're a little frolic and detour, as we call it in the law, happening. We're having to manage and confront parking issues and stuff, but that happens in construction, and I will encourage everybody to know that we're going to be watching, so please leave those orange cones where they are and the no parking signs, and let us get our work done.
I didn't know those were big in the souvenir community here, but I guess when you welcome 48,500 back, not all of them, I would assume, don't want to play by the rules, but that is funny. I didn't know that was a thing, so... downtown construction is exactly that. And then obviously we'll watch everything get paved and painted and marked. That's the next step. Well, the next step is getting things cleaned up at the corner of 4th and College, or 4th and Walnut. The parking garage is open for business. At least the parking part of it is. Monday was the big ribbon cutting.
Yeah, I actually went in there yesterday just to check it out. That's, of course, a replacement of a garage that was... You know, I mean, you don't even want to bring it up, but, you know, that we were actually worried about the physical safety of that building after some inspections 2 or 3 years ago now. And when you see what can happen with buildings that aren't inspected well and kept up well, you know, I'm glad we did what we did, and we had to replace that garage because it just wasn't safe. And now it's a beautiful new garage. As you said, the parking is open for automobiles, I think bikes too. There's still some bells and whistles to put on there, including some big art project and solar panels, and we're going to do a real appropriate ribbon cutting when that's done in a month or two and welcome people back there. But in the meantime, it is helpful for people who are working downtown or shopping downtown, and welcome you to check it out.
Take some of the stress off of again, the street parking, because you are losing spots on 7th Street. That's a fact, on both sides of the street. So that's a couple downtown blocks that you won't have. How helpful is it to have these garages? I guess that question answers itself. But the 7 line that we've been talking about, that runs from the Beeline Trail through campus, that will have no parking spots, correct, on any side of the aisle?
Yes, the 7th Street, which will now include the 7 line, is going to be for mobility, for buses and cars and bikers and walkers and all, and we'll be parking cars somewhere else. So, you know, in general, as a city, we like to see conversion of housing for cars, as we would call it, you know, surface parking lots or other things, and convert that as possible into more active and more high-value use. Which means if you have structured parking, and we have that scattered around, and if you have other on-street parking that lets you redevelop areas for other uses. You know, look at Kirkwood, right? We took some parking spaces away.
Good
and
point.
Restaurants have added seating, and that's really wonderful to be able to do as long as we can accommodate everybody who wants to get in and out of downtown.
Now, the next question will be, once the garages are all up and opening, do we have enough spots? How do you determine if that's ever the case or not? I know we can't just base that on the busiest weekend of the year or whatever. Are we confident we have enough place to house all these cars?
Yeah, you know, there's a fancy term called transportation demand management that really we actually have a new position in city government that's focused on that highfalutin concept, but it really goes to the question that you want to think about how do you reduce the need for single automobile travel and parking and increase the options for folks. That means increasing carpooling, increasing transit use, increasing other things, because it is bad for the environment and it is bad for our it's kind of wasteful space to have tons of single passenger cars moving around and then sitting downtown all day not doing anything except paying for parking. So you really try to do demand management. You try to think about, well, here's the spaces that we have now. How do we price them? How do we encourage behaviors that will encourage high use of the parking spaces that we have, but not an overuse? So it's a constant, you know, market mechanism that looks at that. So far, you know, our parking spaces are still pandemic level. You know, we still have a lot of people who aren't working downtown in person, and so it's a constant management of demand that way.
Interesting. All right, sounds good. I see a look out my window, as I always do here at the One City Center. I see scooters. I see electric bikes rolling. I see all kinds of things. So we're all good with all those companies, and that's kind of getting back to normal as well? Did you guys come to agreement, or how did that work out?
I mean, I'm happy we have those are private companies that provide all of those resources to our people. And my general view is more mobility options are better. And so obviously there can be issues making sure we manage how people use them, where they park them, where they leave them. And those are sometimes transitions. I'm sure the horse and buggy industry was really mad about what cars did when they arrived, and similar bicycles and other things. But these are technology experiments, frankly. I don't know if they'll all be around in 10 years. Who knows? But for right now, it's trying to see how do people get around in new ways, and let's try to explore what works best.
Absolutely. We'll let capitalism sort out the rest as we usually do. Moving along, we missed you last week, obviously, but we learned last week that the city of Bloomington put out a document to the press and obviously put on the website and everything else that updated and aggregated the city of Bloomington's policies regarding behaviors in and use of public spaces with the goals of improving safety, health, and maintaining public space for the benefit of all. I wanted to read that quote directly because that came out earlier in the week. We also then learned that later in the week on Friday that the folks who are camping out near and under the bridge at Grime Street were going to be asked to leave. I'm not going to say obviously. That's the dumbest thing you can ever say when you're conducting an interview. It seems like one meted the other, and then so everybody was kind of on the same page before Friday rolled around. Was that the intent, to put that out early in the week so when Friday came everybody would kind of know what the parameters and rules and regulations were? Tell me how this came about.
Yeah, and thanks for asking about it. Really, it's been a long process over quite a few months where we've seen behaviors in and around public spaces that were deteriorating, frankly, that were trespassing and vandalism and aggressive behaviors, some assaults, some issues of aggressive animals and other illegal behaviors and illegal fires. And we just kind of seen an acceleration of some of that, and that's really important to try to address. And I had asked a group of my colleagues in city government to think about how do we address. And public safety is a complicated issue. You got to there's you push one lever here and something can happen over there, and you know, it takes some thought. And this really grew out of that extensive review and dialogue with downtown residents and institutions and partners, nonprofits and others, to think about how do we deal with this. And one of the things we wanted to do was just make clear that there are behavior standards expected in public places, whether it's a park or a sidewalk or anything else that where the public comes, that we have to protect safety for all the public to be able to enjoy those places and feel safe and be safe in those places. So we wanted to put in one place kind of an articulation of that. We'd done this before in the parks. As you may remember, last winter we kind of had to say, look, you can't sleep overnight in parks.
Right.
That's the policy. We went through a lot of time and discussion about that, and this was kind of another iteration of that, reminding people these are the rules that are out there. Now, we did, and it was focused on behavior, but there was some encampment response as well, and one of the things that the city embraces is the idea that you give people notice, 72 hours notice, 3 business days, if you have an encampment that's developed and you feel that's not safe, that you give notice and you work with folks. And so we had in a very extensive period for a particular encampment that had grown up right around Switchyard Park, that had been expanding, had been causing real issues, behavioral issues and interactions with the public. And so that gave a number of days to work with folks who were there. Say, look, do you need a place to stay? Do you need contact with a job placement? Do you need help with substance use? Do you need help with mental health? Do you need anything? And there was a ton of outreach. And in the end, though, we said, look, you can't live here. You can't sleep here. This is not safe. It's not working. The behaviors are really damaging other people's ability to use the public property. So that took place last Friday. And actually, I think it was very peaceful. It was very these are hard situations. There are people who are struggling, and we were helping people find better options.
And for those folks that saw the video, I believe it was the Bloomingtonian. Jeremy Hogan used to be an HT photographer, shot a 3-minute video down there. You could kind of see of the largesse of what was going on if you weren't familiar with it. And the irony was, in the background, you could see the New Hope family, or you can explain better. I don't have the correct name in front of me. What's being built behind that, just all being encapsulated in 100 square yards, it seems.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Bloomington picture, right? You've got trying to help people who are struggling right now with some immediate issues, and frankly, we took away, I don't know, 50 or 80 bicycles that were chop-shopped kind of in there, and there's a lot of stuff going on the one hand, and then right next to it, as you said, millions of dollars of new construction for homeless families, New Hope for families that are going through really tough times, that are the right thing, to get housing first and to get people into a safe and good location. So, you know, Bloomington keeps changing, and that was kind of a poignant juxtaposition of both those things happening, you know, right next to each other.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. He joins us every Tuesday. And part of the interesting part of the document you put out earlier last week, it kind of gives a, I think, the response of how this will happen the next time we find one, because just listening to that video, some of the people that we interviewed said, you know, yeah, we'll move on, but, you know, we'll find another spot to deal with it. That's just going to happen because, as you've mentioned, there are some behavior issues who people don't want help. They just want to kind of do what they want to do, and they're just going to do it somewhere else. So this at least gives a concrete plan of, hey, if this pops up in the city limits next time, just be aware. It's just too bad, though, that the people that are having the behavioral issues aren't reading this. That's the tough part.
Well, it's some are. It's a person at a time. You know, everybody has a story. Everybody has a life story, and you know, some of them are in really complicated, difficult places right now. Some of them are choosing that. Some of them are kind of dealing with afflictions that cause that to happen, and we work very closely with our mental health providers and housing providers and others to try to keep chipping away at this. And, you know, living outdoors in August is different from living outdoors in February, but neither of them is a good situation, and We're going to continue to work to try to make sure everybody can have a home in Bloomington, but also to understand their expectations of behaviors. And we got to have a city that's safe and welcoming to everybody in all our public places.
And that kind of ties in with the budget, which is obviously going to got started, what, yesterday? You presented your thoughts last Friday. For people that maybe weren't in and about, what were some of the key issues? I know you were looking at adding 10 more police or public safety officers, 5 police officers, 4 resourcers, and 1 perhaps manager that goes along with that. What else was a focal point of your budget you were going to send to the council?
Yeah, well, you got 30 minutes. I'll give you my talk.
Ah,
no, I won't do that whole thing.
For you can go as long as you want, buddy.
There's a lot. Budgets are really important. It's about $170 million worth of investment that we see annually here. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of what I call a rainy day budget still, where we're trying to help our community recover, both at an individual level and job level, commerce, business. So there's a lot of moving parts. It's essential that we have this federal help. There's about $10 or $11 million, maybe close to 15 if you count it all up, that's kind of one-time federal support that's going to help us invest in recovery. So we're using that to do a lot of things around housing, around jobs, around infrastructure, which I could talk about. And then that is one of the main pieces of the budget that's kind of special and important this year. And the second piece you referenced is public safety. We really are investing pretty significantly to enhance, improve public safety. It's, again, the pandemic and certain stresses are showing up in our community. We have had more gun violence this year. So we are proposing, and I propose this to the council. They have to vote on the budget, but last night I asked them, and they'll hear tonight directly from the police, for 5 more paid sworn officer positions, as well as 5 more unsworn officers. These would be kind of the neighborhood and community specialists, as well as 3 dispatchers on the front line of our dispatch, as well as 2 new firefighter positions that will be focused on health. And so it's a major investment in public safety, as well as a major investment in community recovery, I'd say, are the 2 big pillars of that.
Now, what is the federal government money? Do you have an acronym for that I can never get right?
Yes, it's the American Rescue Plan Act, known as ARPA. And that's the $22 million that we got notification in the spring, passed by the Congress and signed by the President. And then that we got $11 million in this year. We think we'll get the next $11 million early next year. The county got $29 million of that. That's really essential money to help us because we did take some hits in the budget. We're going to see a little lower income tax revenue. The property taxes were strong. But this is critical money to help us do the kind of investment in public safety, the investment in job recovery, the investment in affordable housing, the investment in public infrastructure projects that we can do to help the community climb out of what's still, look, we're still thousands of jobs behind in our community, and we want to help move forward into a better tomorrow. Whenever this pandemic, we climb out of that, we want to be sure we're in good spot for people to thrive.
And speaking of pandemic and Delta variants and everything else that goes along with that, Indiana University obviously back at school the last couple of weeks, students arriving and going through that. I know your group is still meeting and having a press conference every Friday. The numbers, tell me about how the numbers are moving along and where are we at with testing and vaccinations?
Yeah, so the numbers are not good, Mike. Even locally, we've seen our daily case number about triple in the last number of weeks. Our hospitalizations have gone up 4 or 5-fold in the region here. We're better than the state. The state has actually had a 10-fold increase in daily cases in the last 4 or 6 weeks. Hospitalizations up. Deaths have doubled. So, look, all this is the wrong direction. Almost everybody in the hospital is unvaccinated. It's a pandemic that's really hitting unvaccinated folks hard. We continue to need masking. We continue to need the vaccinations with the full approval of Pfizer yesterday. Maybe that will help people take the step to say, all right, well, it's safe, it's effective, it's official. No reason not to. Let's go get it done. Testing is become another. We've kind of had to revamp and reopen testing. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen. Of course, the private testing is still available at drug stores and other places, doctor's offices, but I think we may be opening up a public spot again to do testing just because there's more need for it. It's really unfortunate. I hope people will do the right thing. You know, you got to mask up and you got to get vaccinated.
And then I also saw a headline as well. Your Bloomington Transit is struggling to find drivers as well, yeah, and having to reduce routes. So it kind of just trickles down into almost everything in life here. So how do you go about finding more drivers?
Well, you offer them better pay and bonuses and recruitment. And, you know, there's a lot of discussions going on with the current drivers who – let me tip my hat to the current drivers who have kept us going through all of this and really difficult, challenging times. You know, overall, driving career is there's a lot of struggle in trucking companies and school buses and long haul. All that stuff is having difficulty finding drivers. So we're ending up, I think we're offering $3,000 bonuses higher on and $3,000 referral bonuses. So if you want to be a driver, now's a good time.
Get licensed up and ready to go, and we'll see what
we'll even pay you to get your license. So don't worry about that. You know, even, just come on in.
even better. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. Just trying to cover all our bases here. The budget is all week this week, or is that just Monday through Thursday? How does the hearings work there? And is that online? And we can do all that.
Yeah, Monday through Thursday, four nights at 6 o'clock, the council convenes. We did ours last night. Tonight is utilities, transit, police and fire, I believe. Tomorrow, Wednesday night, is a whole slew of different departments. And then Thursday night is basically public works and all of their components. We're in the middle of a multi-week process. The council ultimately votes on this in October, finally. But this is a kind of a way to get the final details in front of them, and we can have final discussions about it.
And an after-hours ambassador. Oh, I didn't know the last one left. We didn't have a lot of after-hours going on there during the pandemic. It's not a new position. It's just a position that was not filled for some time. Give us the update there, please.
Yeah, so this was a position that was actually recommended by a group of residents of the community who were brought together to think about how to change government and how we do our work, innovate. And they said you should have a position of somebody who kind of represents City Hall when City Hall's closed. This is a town that's very active between 5 p.m. and 3 a.m. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, about right.
And having somebody who can work with businesses, enterprises, with individuals. So it's a new position. It's not unique to Bloomington. There's numbers of cities in America and around the world that have this kind of representative. And we did have it vacant for quite a while, but we're glad to have somebody back in the position. And just take a look out and watch for the after hours ambassador around downtown. They tend to be in the downtown area and help and try to make sure if anybody needs help or if we have issues with what's going on, we've got a person on the street who's not just a police officer or a firefighter.
And wrapping up the headline, Bloomington Housing Authority plans a $30 million Crestmont upgrade. How does that money come about, and what are we going to do to update everything going on over there?
Well, that's a really exciting thing. I'm glad you asked that. Most people don't realize that the Bloomington Housing Authority helps probably approaching 1,500 families or 33,000, 4,000 people with affordable housing every night where people sleep. A couple hundred of those are units that we own, the Housing Authority owns. Most of the rest are vouchers that go in the community. But those units that we own needed a spruce up, and Bloomington Housing Authority's done a really great job to do that over a five-year period instead of a 25-year period, which is what it first looked like. This is basically federal money, federal housing programs, and there's a way to accelerate that by kind of converting them into nonprofits, actually, and way more complicated than that. But in the short of it is, we're able to do hundreds of units of rehab over a short few years that will make better quality housing, better outcomes for our folks. And kudos, it's a good story that's happening, and reminding us that this is a community that really does try to take care of people every day.
And the city's role in this is, I'm reading here about helping out with the bond issue.
We do issue bonds from city council. You know, the Bloomington Housing Authority is part of city government, and I appoint all the board members, and they hire a director. And one particular step is that the city council can approve tax-exempt bonds to be done that can help finance this. So that's what just recently got approved, and it's paid for by federal housing money, basically.
Well, outstanding. So that's a pretty good update. What have I left anything off? We know we got Food Truck Friday coming out. Parks and Rec's got concerts coming up this weekend. There's probably Movie in the Park and all that fun stuff.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm going to be conducting the orchestra.
Oh, that's what I was
going to
ask
you.
I knew I had something.
I gotta get my chops together, but I don't think it's a second career for me. But it's something I'm.
Well, I was
going to
ask you about that because from somebody who is tone deaf, and that's not my favorite rapper. How does one conduct an orchestra or practice to do so? Do you have to sit in?
Well,
do you have
to? Big secret. I'm a musician. I've been conducted by a lot of people. I haven't conducted much myself, but it's a technique and skill, and you know, Jacobs teaches people every day how to do this stuff. But the Bloomington Community Orchestra is doing a great concert down at the Switchyard Park at the big amphitheater. There's a young violinist who's going to wow us, I think, and I get to. It's kind of like a dog walking on two legs, I guess a mare holding a stick or something with an orchestra, but it'll be fun. And it's Sunday evening, 7 to 9.
Do your best Michael Tilson Thomas impersonation if you
will. Ooh, nice.
See,
okay.
There's books and covers. Watch out, folks. What is your instrument of choice? Again, I enjoy listening to music, all kinds of music. I cannot keep a tune. What is your instrument of choice?
Well, I'm a singer and I'm a piano player, and I actually in young days played a tuba sousaphone, but I haven't touched a tuba and I don't intend to.
A heavy lift.
But but I do love I love music, and this orchestra is always a transporting kind of thing, and I'm going to lead a fun little piece that you'll recognize if you're there, and you'll enjoy it.
This is coming up on Sunday.
Sunday night, Sunday evening at Switchyard. The weather's going to be what? Let me guess. Warm?
Yeah, you get 90. That's
okay.
90.
Well, there's a splash pad. There's shade.
Let's keep that on a little bit longer. You have some pull in that, so we'll make sure that happens.
I'll see what I can do.
Is this a tryout, or is this just a one-time?
I think it's a one and done.
Okay.
I think it's a one and done. You know,
even if your performance wows them, you've already signed an agreement that suggests.
I don't need that kind of pressure, Mike. Let's just call it one and done. You know?
All right.
But I do. I love the opportunity. I really appreciate it. It'll be fun, and I hope people will get out and enjoy the music in the park.
All right, one more question, because you do play a lawyer in real life, not only on the radio. I'm watching the ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 come out today and tell the sporting world about they're going to have a conference alliance about these three organizations trying to preserve and do college athletics the right way and make sure that the greater good and all of this happens. And one of the sports reporters, obviously, who is on this Zoom conference, says, okay, so what does it say in your written agreement? And they say, we don't have a written agreement. We have a gentleman's agreement. What should I read into that if I'm a sports fan? And I know you don't have all the details, but Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, said he was told in law school, if you have to go back and read the details of a contract, you might have gotten to business with the wrong guy. That's a cool story, but, you know, what if the SEC comes around and says, hey, we'd like to have these two teams here, and you said, well, our gentleman's agreement didn't say anything about that. How does contractual law work? Here in 90 seconds, please.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time since I took contracts, but I don't know any of the details of what you're referencing. What is that old phrase of the devil's in the details?
Oh, I think so. Wouldn't it?
It is important in complex relations like that, absolutely it's going to be a lot of figuring out, as you said, well, what exactly does that mean if team A and B want to do this or conference C wants to do that? Is that okay? And, well, we didn't really think about it. I mean, it's, I can tell you when we're doing rules for COVID, a mask rule, you can say we have an agreement that you got to wear masks indoors, but then somebody says, well, wait a minute, what if it's a two-year-old? Or they say, well, wait a minute, what if I'm having a bite of a sandwich? Or, well, wait a minute, what if I'm with only one other, you know, there's always details for all that stuff.
Yeah, so you're not working on gentlemen's agreements there is the larger point.
I would just say in the city we generally can't do much on gentlemen's agreements or gentlewoman's agreements. We have to write it down, and that's kind of what the public expects, too. They want to be able to read it.
And then these conferences get a lot of money and a lot of power and a lot of other things. So that just struck me as odd if we're doing quote-unquote big deals. 41 schools, athletic directors.
Wow.
And that's how many, if you combine them all. You know, the Big Ten doesn't have 10 anymore. They have 14. The Pac-12 has 12. That's good. They've updated that. And the ACC has, I believe, 16. So, when you get them all together.
It's complicated stuff. I mean, I don't envy them. The world changes. They had to deal with the pandemic. Oh, my gosh. And yet all the alums and all the fans want to see things happening. All the athletes want to compete, but everybody needs to stay safe. And now you got name, image, likeness going on and everything else. So, you know, good luck.
Just come out and say it is all about the money and protecting our share of it, and then people will just appreciate it. You don't have to dress this up as anything else that it isn't. Without the money, you can't do all the student help and special services and Olympics. You don't have the money, you can't do that. But that's another discussion for another day.
And I always like to remember, too, that, you know, there, for every famous college student athlete, there are 1,000 unknown college student athletes for whom it's really important and a big part of school, and figuring out how to make it work for everybody is pretty tricky.
Absolutely. And you follow the money, that's usually where you'll find the answers, because the greater good has to have a pocketbook to handle all that. We understand that. All right, best of luck with your budget hearings and everything else going on. What do you do to train to get the orchestra ready? Do you do it in the mirror? How do you work that?
I got a session with a conductor, and then I got to listen to the music, and I'm practicing with the orchestra once, too. That's, you know, nice. We got to get to know each other.
Go find the experts. That's why I call you every Tuesday. I appreciate your insight to everything and answering the questions, my friend. Thank you.
Nice to be with you. Take care, Mike.